What does it mean to have Big Dip energy, Elise?
Big Dip energy is a magnetic quality that you possess
right.
that draws people to you like chips to a bowl of dip. And the person who brought the dip probably has the Big Dip energy. And the other people, they're the chips. You can be a chip, a dip, or a switch. You have Big Dip energy, Dan, and
oh,
I think you've
you.
Known that your whole life.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And today, we're diving deep into dip. I don't know if you noticed, but I think dip is kind of having a moment. A new restaurant just opened in Atlanta that serves only dip. Salon.com declared that fondue is having a comeback, and Martin Short's character on Only Murders in the Building has popularized dips in a whole new way.
You know, this is all I eat. Dips for dinner. I bet I have not had a regular entree for years. Granted, I've lost 14 pounds and a significant amount of hair, but it's totally worth it.
To top it all off, my friend Elise Whitney just published a new cookbook dedicated entirely to dip. It's called Big Dip Energy, 88 parties in a bowl for snacking, dinner, dessert, and beyond. It's full of Elise's boundless enthusiasm for dips, puns, good times with friends, and kitsch. On the day of our interview, she came into the studio wearing custom earrings that looked like dipped chips.
They're mismatched. One is a ruffled style chip with what I call cranch, which is my version of ranch. The other one is a tortilla chip with queso, and there's some rhinestones. I'm sure that we can get a picture somewhere into the content later.
Well, they're phenomenal.
Thank you.
I can't claim to be on Elise's level of devotion to dip, but I am passionate about it, and I have thought a lot about dip and dipping techniques over the years. So I wanted to ask Elise to weigh in on some of my biggest dip questions and challenges, and about how she transforms some of her favorite foods into dips. But first, I wanted to find out how she got obsessed with dips in the first place. She says in her book, dips are a universal love language.
Have you ever met anyone who doesn't like dip?
No, but if I did, I don't think we'd be friends for long.
Yeah. So when we talk about love languages, we talk about what makes us feel love and how we like to give love. I think that dip can be given and received equally. And if you bring dip to any party, it will be a hit. If you bring dip to a random gathering, it'll become a party.
To me, one of the things that's so appealing about dips is that it's an inherently, it's an interactive way of eating.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, as someone who is kind of a control freak and who puts probably too much thought into every little bite, it's like it allows you, it lets you kind of run wild. I also just feel like dip is inherently communal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that creates a sort of an unspoken bond.
Yes. You're all in dip together.
I told you there'd be puns. Elise grew up in Binghamton in upstate New York, about halfway between New York City and Buffalo. She has fond food memories from her childhood, but her parents weren't big cooks.
I'm adopted from South Korea. I was adopted at 7 months old. Grew up in a very white bread, wonderful white parents' household, but very like shake and bake and instant mashed potatoes kind of family. And I learned how to cook because I didn't like the way my parents seasoned or lack of seasoning in food. So by watching the Food Network, by watching food TV, reading food magazines voraciously as a kid, I taught myself to cook completely by watching and learning and testing on my family and buying ingredients because I grew up in the land of Wegmans. So I was really introduced to a lot of international ingredients in a way that a lot of people aren't if they have a small, tiny grocery store in their small town.
Even as a kid, Elise was drawn to dips. The first ones she remembers making herself were ranch and French onion, made from powder mixes stirred into sour cream. But there was one dip her mom would make from scratch on special occasions.
My mom would have these parties for a game called Bunko. I don't really know. I think it involved dice.
Okay.
It was an upstate New York mom thing. She wasn't really a partier, but she played this game and she would make a 7-layer dip of various ingredients. And that was my first introduction to what party starter dip can be. Her 7-layer dip was probably the one that was somewhere in a magazine or the back of a box somewhere. It had the refried beans. It had a guacamole layer. It had a salsa layer. It had a cheesy layer. And then I think that the trick with a 7-layer dip is the top layers, it's cheating. It's really just garnishes. It's shredded lettuce. It's chopped tomatoes. It's chopped onions and cilantro for me, not for her. But yeah, it was one of those things that you look at for the first time from the side and you see that beautiful side profile. My mom's attentive to detail, pure craftsmanship with this dip. So That was the first time, I think, that I discovered that there was more to dip. There were layers and layers to love.
Over the years, Elise graduated from those packaged dips. She began combining her cooking skills with her love of dip to create things like Cranch, ranch dip with cream cheese instead of mayo to add creaminess. She started working for food magazines like Bon Appetit and Rachel Ray every day. She became known for creating dips for every occasion. Then in 2017, during the holidays, she went as far as to create an annual event centered around dip. She called it Dipmas.
It can also be Dipmica. So I was thinking, I'm sick of cookie swaps. I love the idea of them and bringing people together, but I'm not someone who eats a lot of sweet treats. Why are the holidays only associated for gathering with either a large meal or with cookie parties? So I said, I've always loved dips, and I've always had dips and been known for dips at parties. I was like, why don't we do an all dips potluck? And then when I came, at first it was called Dip the Halls, and that was still the slogan. But then I came up with Dipmas, which just rolled off the tongue so nicely. The first Dipmas, I asked people to either bring a dip or a dipper.
Dipper is the catch-all term Elise coined for any food item you're dipping. Chip, cracker, veggie, whatever it is, if you're dipping it, it's a dipper. And most people at this party brought dippers. Fortunately, Elise had enough dips to make a little buffet.
People at the time just decided what they thought was a dip. One person brought cream cheese with pepper jelly on top, which technically with a cracker is dippable if it's soft enough. There was a really amazing layered taco dip. And I debuted my crab rangoon dip, I believe, that year or the next year. It kind of all blurs together. But Dipmas became something that everyone looked forward to every year. It grew bigger every year. I once had 36 people in my studio apartment in East Harlem. It just is a great way to gather people, and they can dip in and dip out of the party because you can come in, even if for an hour, have a couple dips, mix and mingle and leave. And there has been smoke alarms set off from buffalo chicken dip overflowing. You live and you learn with Dipmas, and I think that it really was just, it showed me that dip brings people together, and I don't think this book would have existed had I not started Dipmas.
Today, the tradition's still going strong. Each year, Elise reigns over Dipmas with the title she deserves, Dip Queen. She brings her enthusiasm for dips and many other foods to her work writing her Cosmo food column, Doing the Least with Elise, and to her time hosting and judging on the Netflix shows Easy Bake Battle and Pressure Cooker. But nowhere is she more clearly the Dip Queen than in her new book. I know you're familiar with The Sporkful.
Yes.
You know that we are renowned for our hard-hitting journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I hope you didn't think you were going to write a whole book about dips and just come in here and get a bunch of softball questions.
You're going to dip deeper.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
What is your take on double dipping?
Double dipping is a cardinal sin. It is the worst thing you can do at a party because you have contaminated the group experience. If you want to double dip on your own plate. Double dip in your own bowl. Serve yourself and then double dip. I also have a whole set of techniques to avoid double dipping because only you can prevent double dipping. So in the book, there's the dip and flip, which is dip and then flip it over, dip the other side.
So the dip and flip, you dip one end of your dipper, whether mm-hmm. chip, veggie, whatever it is.
Yes.
You bite. You then flip, so you're holding the bitten end,
mm-hmm.
and you dip the other end.
Yes.
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Now, one thing I worry about with the dip and flip is that if you're at a party, people might not see that you did the flip.
Yes.
And so then they're going to think you double dipped even when you did a dip and flip.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
So you have to kind of be exaggerated with the flip. If someone's near you, if you're alone, do whatever. But say you're standing right next to me waiting to go into the dip. We haven't chatted yet. I dip in, I take a bite, I flip it, and I dip in again. If you looked away for a moment, you could miss that. But
and then I'd be whispering, oh my God, you see Elise? She's a double dipper.
Yeah, and that's a really bad reputation and really slander. I would say you either have to be over-exaggerated with your movement or you have to express yourself and say that, oh, I'm doing the dip and flip. And it's a great conversation starter. I do call dip a water cooler, but cooler, because it really is a place for people to gather around, dip into new conversation, find new friendship. And that happens over a bowl of dip, but don't double dip.
What about double dipping? Like, it's just me and my immediate family, four of us.
No. I don't like it. Unless you all have consented to double dipping.
What about with your significant other? It's just the two of you.
You know, I didn't think about this. I'm currently single. If any of the listeners of The Sporkful would like to double dip with me, I can arrange it. Dan can arrange it.
There you go. We'll put you in touch.
That being said, preventing double dipping can also be done by dipping alone. That is one of the techniques. And it's just eating with yourself, and you can dip, double dip as many times as you want. But I think if you were just sharing a bowl of dip on the couch, then that would be fine. To double dip, I suppose, because you only want to hold one bowl, but you could also just put it on.
Clearly, Elise and I could say more on this topic, but I had other pressing issues for us to get to. I wanted to know, what are the considerations she takes into account when determining the right shape for a dipper?
When determining the right shape of a dipper, it should be able to not immediately snap and break under the weight of the dip. So it's a pairing thing as well, which I think is maybe a separate conversation. However, if you don't mind me opening this container.
Please, yeah, let's do it. We're opening
some
up
show
a container.
Some show and tell only to you. Some
beautiful. I should have mentioned, Elise came to the studio with an assortment of dips to share. She grabs a piece of carrot in a thin strip, like if you took a vegetable peeler and ran it along the length of a big carrot.
Yes. Carrot ribbons.
Carrot ribbons.
You can make them as long or short as you like. I have found that about 2 inches is good for the dip and flip. Any shorter, and you can't flip. With this carrot ribbon, you can really slide it through the dip. It's flexible, but it actually won't break. Can you see that it's not snapping?
Now it did, but...
Well, as I said that.
Right. But see, my concern with that, my instinct with that, with a carrot ribbon would be to fold it in half to make it a little bit stronger.
Sometimes I do that, yes.
Because I'd be worried it would be a little flimsy.
Fold
it and then kind of like run it through, like snowplow.
Yes. So I find that also there's a technique where you roll it up into a little tube.
You roll up the carrot ribbon in. Oh.
Kind of like a cannoli made of carrots.
Right.
That wasn't my best pun. But I do think that with something like this, though, as you said, you like to customize your experience in dipping. You like to be able to have as much dip on your dipper as you want. So I think that there's a lot of determining factors in whether a dipper is right for a specific dip as well. But overall, I think it should be able to hold the amount of dip you want it to without breaking or falling or making you accidentally stick your finger in the dip. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Okay. But I have more questions.
Okay, I'm here.
What is your take on raw broccoli as a dipper?
Ooh, I was at a party the other night and they had blanched broccoli and I sat by that table all night.
Blanched broccoli. So not raw.
Not raw. I don't like raw broccoli. I love broccoli. It's my favorite vegetable. I hate raw broccoli. As a dipper, it's disgusting. The texture, this bitterness that comes out of broccoli, and then you get all of the little florets stuck in your teeth. That's one thing I regret not getting into the book, because I realized that I just thought everyone knew raw broccoli sucked and raw cauliflower sucked. So I didn't put it in the book. And now, thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell
people
to blanch
it. I'm glad we're getting this out there, because, no, I agree with you 100%. Raw broccoli. I also love cooked broccoli in a million different ways. I detest raw broccoli. It's gross. You gotta steam it. You gotta steam it or blanch it or something.
Anything.
Raw broccoli's gross.
Something that I found is with broccoli specifically, it's one of those really easy vegetables to buy frozen. I always buy Costco frozen broccoli. And if you steam up that bag, you also can roast frozen broccoli. Roasted broccoli would also be a great dipper.
What is the best shape of chip for dipping?
I do think it's the tiny scoop, the bowl. Whether you make it yourself or you buy it, that gives you so much surface area to nestle into. But also anything, as with cascatelli, ridges that can hold onto the dip. So ridge chips, that's less of a shape because it can—
It's a property, though. You want surface area.
A characteristic.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of the scoop chip. I feel like it's good in certain situations.
Yeah, it's not an every dip chip.
My concern with it is that if you put it in your mouth with, you know, sort of right side up, those vertical walls of the scoop will cut the roof of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real concern to me.
I actually don't always eat a scoop in one bite. Sometimes because the dip is across the entire surface. If you bite in, you don't get it like jamming against the roof of your mouth.
Right.
When you bite in, you're controlling where the teeth land versus all at once. And then I wonder if you could flip it upside down. I've never tried that. You do that with a cheeseburger, right? Have you tried this?
Yes, but yes, I have.
Dip to tongue?
I have tried flipping the scoop. I mean, a million years ago, I did a whole thing on this where I was interviewing a structural engineer, and he was saying how like the strongest shape in engineering is an arch, and a 3D arch is a dome. And then I realized that if you take a scoop chip and turn it upside down and put it on your fingertip like a thimble, it functions like a dome. And once you do that, you can run that thing through like ice cold cream cheese and it won't break.
Wow.
So I think there's a lot of merit to that. And it also alleviates your issue, or my issue really, of the fact that it can cut the roof of your mouth.
One of the chips I brought today that I never get because I live in LA now is called a Dipsy Doodle. And it is kind of like a wave scoop. So maybe trying that will help.
Right. It's shaped almost like
a... You can open it.
All right. These are shaped kind of like sun chips.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like a little bit like an accordion
corn.
Thing. I'm
going to
open
powder.
The bag. Oh, yeah. You know, I have... Yeah, they're like... They're kind of like sun chips, but they're a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice. Sun chips are... I love the flavor of those, but the size can be a bit of a challenge.
Have you had the minis?
No.
Oh, they come in the Pringles can.
Okay.
And they have Doritos like that, too. Excellent dipper.
Okay.
Both of them.
So what do we have here, Elise? Let's talk about this incredible spread you brought.
So this is the first dip is my shrimpless scampi dip, inspired by vegetarian friends. It is all the elements of shrimp scampi minus the butter, which made it weird. I did try once and no. Olive oil. So the shrimpless scampi dip, I take 8 cloves of garlic. I aggressively rough chop them. Then you kind of almost like steep it in olive oil for like 4 minutes just on a medium-low heat. So it infuses the oil in a quick way and also gets just lightly golden brown because that, you know, carryover cooking with garlic. And then the olive oil and the garlic both go into the sour cream and mayonnaise, a whole lemon's worth of zest and juice, some kosher salt, black pepper, galore, as much as you want. And I normally do chives. Could not get chives today, so I use parsley.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a spoon for you.
Thank you. Will you have some too?
Oh, yes, I will. For dippers of this, we have the Dipsy Doodles, and we have Ruffles Cheddar and Sour Cream. I only mention it by name brand because they are my favorite chip. I'm going to get a tattoo of it.
All right.
So please dip in.
So what we have here is we have some beautiful shrimp. We have some cucumbers. We have the carrot ribbons. We also have a couple different chips. Do you have a thought about what I should be dipping first?
No, I think that your favorite part about dipping is that you can choose your own adventure. So
I'm going to start with the shrimp.
Shrimp, me too.
Mmm. Oh, yes. Is there a lemon in there?
Mm-hmm. A whole lemon. Zest and juice.
I love that.
Oh.
And what's nice, it's like a little bit creamier than shrimp scampi, but it's got that flavor of the creaminess you need because you need some dipscosity, as you would say, some viscosity to hold it all together. But it's got the lemon, it's got the garlic. All right, should I try with a chip?
Yeah. I love this Dipsy Doodle shape. It's like a wing. It's an angel's wing of a chip, and it holds the dip. Okay, so. I would love for you to do my dipscosity test, which is when you dip and you flip it over. It shouldn't immediately drop or dribble.
So now I have the chip upside down. The dip should not immediately be falling off of the chip. That's how you know that you have enough dipscosity to hold the thing together. Coming up, I ask Elise for advice on what to do when my chip breaks off in the dip, which is a problem I have much too often. And she reveals a secret technique for next-level dessert dips. This is so good.
There's a lot of it, so by all means, as long as the editors can work around the chomping.
Oh, yeah, not our first rodeo, at least.
I know.
Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
It's very good.
Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman, and we are less than 2 weeks away from the West Coast swing of our Sporkful Live Anything's Possible tour. In San Francisco, I'll be in conversation with Vibe Check's Sam Sanders. Can't wait for this. We'll also be joined on stage there by recipe developer Asha Loopy, food stylist Jillian Knox, and photographer Dan Liberti, all of whom you heard in our Anything's Possible series. That's going to be great. Then in L.A., I'll be with comedian Andy Richter, Conan O'Brien's former sidekick and host of the Three Questions podcast. That L.A. event will also include free food samples. And get this, we'll have a special appearance by my pasta fairy godmother, the one and only Evan Kleiman. I would also tell you about our Seattle show, but that one's already sold out. So don't get shut out in California. Get all the tickets and info right now at sporkful.com/tour. One more quick note before we get back to the show. At the end of this episode, I'm going to be talking with the chef who's in charge of the food for all of Norwegian Cruise Line. It's a great conversation. Stay tuned after the credits for that. Now, back to my conversation with Elise Whitney, whose new book is Big Dip Energy. When I found out she was coming into the studio, I knew I had to seek her counsel on a long-time struggle of mine. As I explained, it is a chronic issue for me, Elise, that, you know, however much dip a dipper can hold, I'm always going to push it to the limit.
Okay.
What advice do you have for me?
My recommendation for you specifically and for anyone who also has excessive dip tendencies would be to split the difference. So you're going to take two chips. I'm going to cosplay as Dan Pashman. So this...
So Elise is putting an insane amount of dip on her
and I got my
chip.
Finger in
she
it, too.
She got her finger in it. That's very authentic. That's yes. A good impression of me.
And look at it. It's falling everywhere.
It's falling everywhere.
Mess.
Yes, this is... It's like looking in a mirror.
My recommendation would be that you take another dipper of your choice.
Oh, so you're actually smearing.
Schmear.
You're taking one dipper and smearing off some of the excess dip.
Onto the other. If you find that you've over-dipped, right. Overindulged in the dip, that is a quick fix, right? Grab another dipper, smear. Or, you know, if you have a plate, you could put it on your plate and kind of knock off the excess. In this case, you also, now I realize, could have just folded the carrot around the chip.
Oh, that's a pro move right there. Elise just took the carrot ribbon, wrapped it around the dipped chip. And you're also going to get multiple textures in that bite. I want to try one of those.
It's like a lasagna.
That's very nice. But let's say despite my best efforts, I break a chip off yeah. In the guac. What do I do about it?
It's a party foul, but it happens to the best of us. It happens to me.
Even to you?
Mm-hmm. It can happen to anyone. The structural integrity of chips varies, I think, between chips, too. Sometimes, even the strongest of chips that you've eaten for decades, they can break. I recommend taking another dipper and chasing the piece. You know when you drop an eggshell into, there's a little piece of eggshell when you're whipping eggs?
Yeah, yeah.
You use the eggshell
right,
to get it.
Right, right,
the same thing. Use another dipper, a non-contaminated dipper, and then you actually get a layered crisp that you weren't expecting.
At this moment, I'm too embarrassed to admit to Elise that on many occasions, after breaking a chip off in some dip, I have done just what she suggested, used another chip to try to retrieve the fragments. But I still can't resist overloading the second chip, and then that one breaks. I've sent more chips than I can count to their demise, one after another, like lemmings over a cliff. Sometimes I just give up and get a spoon. Anyway, Elise's book covers a lot of dip ground. Of course, she has her take on classics like spinach artichoke dip, but there are a bunch of totally new creations like Caesar salad dip, where you actually put a whole head of lettuce into the food processor to give the dip a salad-y taste. There's also squash ricotta dip with Japanese curry powder. And there's a whole chapter on dessert dips, or as Elise calls them, can you figure it out?
Dipzerts.
Elise created one dipzert inspired by black and white cookies. They're those big, round, cakey-style cookies sold at Jewish delis and every bodega in New York City. They've got a half moon of dark brown chocolate icing and another of bright white vanilla icing. As Elise was working on her recipe, she found it was hard to capture the cakey part of the cookie in her dip, so she got creative.
A technique that I discovered along the way that I didn't do my due diligence in research if anyone's ever done this before, but on a quick search, no one was soaking cake in cream or cookies in cream and then whipping it. And that's what I do for most of my dipzerts. So I actually went with store-bought grocery store cake with the frosting, a slice, like the $5 slice you can get at any grocery store.
Right.
Because I experimented with the actual black and white cookies because of the hardness of the frosting. I would have had to like take the frosting off and that'd be so wasteful. And then and you're not going to ruin a black and white. And also not everyone can get a black and white cookie or a half moon or whatever you call it.
But just so the technique here for the black and white cookie dip and some of your other dipzerts is that you take a piece of cake.
You pour whipping cream over or heavy cream over it, and then you whip that cream, and it has this lightness. It has the flavor of the cake, but it's not gritty because it completely dissolves.
So when you whip the cream with the cake in it, it basically becomes the consistency of whipped cream.
Yeah.
But with the flavor of cake. I'm almost imagining it like cake batter.
A little bit.
Like cake batter ice cream vibes.
Yeah.
Not exactly the same, but similar in the way that it's sort of like, it has that flavor.
It has the flavor throughout in a way that you don't often get from a dip where it really tastes like cake. Like a lot of the recipes that I saw over the years that have a cake, like a cake batter dip uses a whole box of cake mix, which has like flour in it. And I find that just not, didn't taste good. By kind of disintegrating the cake or the baked good into the cream and then whipping it, you get the flavor throughout. And then it is a lighter base, but it also has the density of the cake in it.
So Elise hit on this technique, then decided to tweak the traditional black and white cookie concept by adding sesame. I love this idea because I love sesame desserts. She adds black sesame paste to the chocolate dip and white sesame paste to the other half. Then she presents the two dips side by side, just like a black and white cookie. She uses the same technique for her strawberry shortcake dip, which she brought into the studio for me. Let's try it.
So the strawberry shortcake dip is normally made with angel food cake as the base, but I had to use Madeline's from Target because that's all I could get. But they were about the same consistency.
I'll take it.
And then we've got some strawberries here that are sliced and some little vanilla wafers and chocolate.
All right.
Teddy-shaped graham.
I'm trying strawberry first. Oh, I got my finger in the dip, but whatever. See, Elise, this is what it is to hang out with me.
Yeah.
But I got how much dip I got on here?
It's a lot of dip.
Mm.
So you make a quick jam using frozen strawberries and a little bit of sugar on the stove and some lemon juice. You let that cool, and then you mix that together with the strawberry, the shortcake. I've tried it with everything. I've tried it with, like, the biscuit-style strawberry shortcake. I've tried it with angel food cake. I've now tried it with Madeline's. It just needs to be kind of a neutral baked good.
Mm. It's so good. It's almost a little bit of like a mind-bending experience because you have the flavor of cake, but you don't see any cake.
Mm-hmm.
My family's going to love this one.
The pairing of a dipper and a dip is something I think is often overlooked. And this strawberry on strawberry, double strawberry, is the best combination. I love it with a cookie. I love it with apples, bananas. But the strawberry on strawberry gives you that double strawberry.
It's so good.
And the last thing I'll say about the strawberry shortcake dip is that when I first made this dip, I was like, oh, all of the dips, the dipzerts, none of them are cloyingly sweet, so you can eat a lot of them. You want to be able to house dip. That is the verb I like to use.
Reading Big Dip Energy kind of feels like hanging out with Elise, which, as you can tell, is a lot of fun. But in addition to all the fun and deliciousness, the book also has heart. One dip I can't wait to try is her Say Kim Cheese dip. You mix chopped kimchi and its brine with a block of cream cheese. Toss a little Kewpie mayo in there, a few spices, and boom. It feels like a perfect representation of Elise.
It's all the best parts of me in dips. I didn't ever want to write an autobiography. And I think that a lot of people feel like they have to put their whole identity into their first book. But what if you're, like, I'm 33. I just didn't think that I've had enough story to tell that kind of first book, which I admire in other people for doing. But I didn't think that was my route. So I actually didn't know if I'd ever write a book. And then dips. They came, and dips have been such a part of my life. And when I realized that could be the only thing I had to write about, it was amazing. But it's chipping away at my life story.
That's Elise Whitney. Her new cookbook is Big Dip Energy, 88 parties in a bowl for snacking, dinner, dessert, and beyond. You can see a photo of her chip and dip earrings on my Instagram at TheSporkful. I'll also post a throwback there of a cooking channel video I did years ago in which I experimented with some pretty revolutionary dipping techniques. Also, we're giving away a copy of Elise's book to one lucky winner. All you gotta do is sign up for the Sporkful newsletter by May 10th. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter. If you're already on the list, you're already entered into this and all of our giveaways. So get on the list. Even if you don't win this one, you might win the next one. Giveaways are open to U.S. and Canada addresses only. Sign up now at sporkful.com/newsletter. Next week on the show, I talk with Priya Krishna about her new kids' cookbook, Priya's Kitchen Adventures. And we'll also hear from some of the kid recipe testers who helped her. While you're waiting for that one, check out last week's show with Naama Shefi of the Jewish Food Society about her mission to document Jewish recipes from around the world. The one before that's all about picky eaters. Check both of them out wherever you got this one. This episode was produced by me along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern,
senior producer
Andres O'Hara,
and producer
Abigail Keel.
Our editor is
Nora Ritchie,
with help this week from Chantel Holder. Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Janet in North Carolina, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Chef Eric, are you wearing chef's whites?
Yes.
I'm very impressed. I've interviewed a lot of chefs. You're the first chef who wore chef's whites to the interview. That's commitment.
Oh, they told me it's a radio interview, so I said, I need to wear my chef's jacket.
This is Chef Eric Bilodeau, Director of Culinary Development and Operations for Norwegian Cruise Line. NCL has been breaking the boundaries of traditional cruising and pioneering experiences at sea for more than 55 years, and Chef Eric is a huge part of that. He grew up in France, and he's lived in 7 other countries around the world. He brings that international background to his work at NCL, overseeing an incredible array of award-winning specialty restaurants.
On the cruise ship, we have so many options. Like in Norwegian Cruise Line, we have a bistro, we have a Greek Mediterranean, we have a steakhouse, we have an Italian, we have an Asian, Mexican, we have a buffet, we have a main dining room that accommodates a lot of people at one time.
To stock all these restaurants for thousands of passengers, Chef Eric says they basically have the equivalent of an entire grocery store on board. That gives his chefs an opportunity to get creative.
Compared to a land-based restaurant, I mean, for a chef, it's a dream come true to work on a cruise line because the sky is the limit. Everything is on board.
Even though stocking the ships is a finely tuned operation for NCL, every once in a while, things don't go exactly as planned.
We were heading up to the Caribbean island, and we realized that we're not going to have enough eggs for the end of the voyage. So we placed an order on one of the island, one stop that the ship was supposed to stop to a local grocery. And then 40 minutes before the ship was scheduled to leave, the truck called me saying it broke down on the side of the road. They called another truck, but the time was really short.
And you have 5,000 guests on board this ship.
And 1,700 crew.
Wow. You need eggs.
Yeah, right. We need fresh eggs. I called the captain and I said, we cannot live without fresh eggs. We're going to have a revolution tomorrow morning. I mean, that's impossible. And he understood. But he said, Eric, this staying half an hour extra on this port is not free.
Every hour that a ship is in the port costs money.
Yes. So the ship stay an additional hour. It cost some money to the company. And the next morning, the captain called me all happy and he said, Eric, I just got the most expensive omelette in my life and I really enjoy it.
So those are the lengths that Chef Eric and his team will go to make sure that your dining experience on Norwegian Cruise Line is second to none. There's nothing like a cruise to bring people together, and Norwegian Cruise Line's priority is people. When you cruise with NCL, you'll have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation on your preferred schedule. There are no set dining times and no formal dress codes. Of course, on top of the world-class dining, there's so much happening on the ship itself, and you're constantly traveling to incredible new locations, all while only having to unpack once. Norwegian Cruise Line provides incredible experiences to guests all around the world. Learn more about everything NCL has to offer by visiting ncl.com. That's ncl.com.